Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, former German international Arne Friedrich with us to talk about what it's like at the moment coaching in the Bundesliga, looking ahead to that restart day in May. Meanwhile, Ali Moreno will be reminiscing on 17 years, would you believe, since Ronaldo scored a hat-trick at Old Trafford and received a standing ovation. But first, as always, let's start, shall we, by taking a look at how the coronavirus is affecting football around the world. And we start with this report that's coming from UEFA saying the executive committee approves guidelines on eligibility for participation in UEFA competitions. Now, access must be based on sporting merit in the 2019-20 domestic competition. So if a league terminates without government decree or economic problems, clubs could be banned from next season's Europa League and Champions League. Meanwhile, the Bundesliga ready to return behind closed doors on May the 9th. I'll be speaking about Arne about that more later on in the show. Meanwhile, a report saying La Liga clubs told no fans for matches until 2021. And that's where I want to start as we welcome in Sid Lowe to the show. Sid, this is massive news, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is also, in truth, but partly conjecture at this point. Of course, nobody knows how this is going to evolve. Nobody knows at which point people will be able to leave their houses. Nobody knows at which point football will restart, or indeed if and when there will be a vaccine. But what has happened here is that in a Zoom meeting with the presidents of La Liga, every single club, Javier Tebas, the president of the entire league, started with a preamble which was very negative. Very, very pessimistic about the future. And he said to them, listen, we have to be ready for the worst. We have to be ready for a very bad situation. And we have to make the assumption that there's a very strong probability now that we won't be playing games with fans in the stadium until after Christmas. Now, it's a vague date, but it is a date and it is a cut-off point. And it does tell you that right now within La Liga, there's a sense that it's going to be a very, very long time before we get genuine normality back.
Now, the plan was, before this news broke, that I'd be talking to you about the possibility that Lautaro Martinez will be staying in Inter Milan, not moving to Barcelona. But this kind of blows the doors off all of these conversations, doesn't it? Because, obviously, no fans coming into the stadium affects all the clubs drastically when it comes to revenue and what they can spend on transfers.
Absolutely it does, and this is exactly what Tebas said to the league's presidents. He said to them all with that speech, look, we have to be ready for the worst. We have to accept the probability now that there won't be fans in stadiums until 2021. Even that is conjecture. Who knows if it might be longer? Who knows when those vaccines will come? And he said quite explicitly to them, and the economic impacts of this are huge. And one of the things he said was, forget big signings. This summer is not going to be a summer of huge circulation of money. It's not going to be a summer with very, very big deals happening. It's probably a good idea that you start concentrating a little bit more closely now on the return of your players who are out on loan at other clubs and on bringing youth team players through. So the two things in Tebas's discourse, at least with the presidents of the league clubs, those two things in his discourse were explicitly linked.
Wow, so what are we going to talk about if we can't talk about Neymar coming back to Barcelona?
Well, inevitably, we'll end up talking about that anyway, won't we? I think that kind of stuff, of course, is going on in the background. But as we've said numerous times on the show before, part of it is a bit irreal at the moment. It doesn't feel like it's genuinely happening because, of course, clubs are looking at a market. They don't know what shape it's going to be in. They don't know what kind of prices is going to be for players. They don't know how much room for manoeuvre they're going to have in terms of negotiating with other clubs. They don't know whether the money they're owed by other clubs in other leagues or indeed in their own leagues is going to come to them, whether they're actually going to have that cash. Because it's not just about your financial situation. It's also about your ability to have cash flow, your ability to put that money down to make signings. And so you know, the signings will happen and there will be transfers, but I think we're going to see a very significant decrease in the prices. I don't think we're going to see 100 million euro moves unless it's something absolutely exceptional. And yeah, I think it's very, very likely indeed that in terms of pure numbers of deals that are done in the summer, that are deals to do with purchasing at least, not necessarily loans, not necessarily swaps, but purchases, I think we'll see that come plummeting as well.
James Rodriguez is someone we've talked a lot about, meanwhile, said on the show, in his future, very much up in the air at the moment, linked to clubs in the Premier League. The latest one is Inter Miami, of course, David Beckham's side. Apparently, Beckham rang up and personally spoke to Real Madrid president Florentino Perez.
I don't know about you, Dan, but this feels much more like, rather than phoning up Florentino Perez, didn't David Beckham just listen to the show the other day when Ali Moreno said this was a good idea? I think he's just completely copied us. He's tuned in. He's thought, you know what? James Rodriguez, what a brilliant idea. Maybe I'll ring up Florentino Perez and say, hey, Florin, Ali's got a great idea. How about it? He can come and play for us. He'll be a big hit here. He'll be a big star here. He must be. Ali said so. And by the way, you get the chance to sell him, you get the chance to take his wages off your book, and you avoid the risk of him having a great season for another European club, and you looking a little bit silly.
There it is then. So it's done and dusted, in your opinion?
That's it, absolutely. Just ask Ali, he started it.
Sid, thank you very much. By the way, for all your latest transfer news, go over to the website, be sure to click on Transfer Talk. Just a reminder, ESPN FC continues tomorrow. Be sure to join us. We'll be discussing all the big talking points from around the world. Welcome in, Arne Friedrich, former German international. Let's talk about that first. Arne, your performance coach, obviously, at the moment at Hertha Berlin. May the 9th, if that is indeed the date, are your players, are they ready to go?
Yeah, that's a very good question. First of all, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor. It's a pleasure. So I just got back from practice, actually. We just listened to the DFL press conference, and obviously the time is really crazy. So we are all dealing with a scenario we have never had before. And so the DFL, and especially Christian Seifert, they're all doing a great job together with the task force. And so the Bundesliga is ready in case the government gives us a go. But obviously there are some challenges involved. So our players, they're out for weeks already. And especially Hertha Berlin, in the middle of March, we had a positive case in our team. We were in quarantine for 2 weeks. We couldn't work out. We couldn't do anything. We were shut down. And after that, we started to return with easy practice. And now, obviously, there are also different regulations in the different states of Germany. So we are allowed for the moment to work in groups of 8 players. So there are other states that just allow groups, you know, with 12 players, or some just with 4 players. So right now there's not really balance in how we can work. But I think every club and also the politician, they're all doing a great job, and we are all prepared for the first game, and it's probably on May 9th. But in the end, obviously, if you want to measure if it's just like a good solution or not, I think it's a very weird time, and we just have to make everything happen and possible that we can finish the season. That's the priority. But there's one higher priority, and that's the health of each and everyone. And I think the politician, they're going to decide if it's possible to play on the 9th, but if it's going to happen on 9th, we will be ready.
Of course, safety imperative in all of this, but let's talk about the rest of the season. Of course, it's been quite the title race in Germany up to the suspension. Bayern Munich find themselves 4 points ahead at the top of the table. How do you think this will play out? Do you think we're going to see Bayern Munich running away with the title once football starts again? Or do you think the chasing pack can put together a bit of a competitive streak?
Yeah, I hope that it's still like very competitive. Obviously Bayern caught up and they're number one again, but from this day on nobody can really estimate how it's gonna end up. But personally I think in the end Bayern Munich is gonna make it, but we have different circumstances, right? So as I mentioned earlier, not every team has the right to practice the same way as the other does. So there, it's not really in balance because of the different states and the different regulations. And it's going to be very tough because, first of all, even if we play, there is no people in the stands, which is a huge factor, of course, too. For us, you know, we have never played without any attendance in the stadium. And, you know, so many more clubs deal with the same problem. So from this day on, nobody can really foresee what's going to happen. But obviously, Bayern Munich has the best roster, obviously. Borussia Dortmund did great so far, even also like Red Bull Leipzig or RB Leipzig. But in the end, I think to me, the most important is that we finish the season. And, if it's Bayern Munich in the end again, so then let it be. But, as I mentioned earlier, we can't really estimate it. I personally think that if we can finish the season, it's going to be Bayern Munich again.
plans, of course, regarding, meanwhile, the Champions League is that it will be played over a 22-day period in August. That's what we understand. Bayern Munich will go into that second favourites. Obviously, very impressive against Chelsea. For you, have they got what it takes to go all the way and win it?
Yes, they do. So I personally know Hansi Flick, the coach. He used to be my assistant coach with the German national team. And I think Bayern Munich needs a coach that really knows how to handle players. And we saw it with Jupp Heynckes. He did a fantastic job. He was a very good leader. He knew how to treat his players. And Hansi Flick, he's a little bit like him. And you saw the recent results. And, you know, Bayern Munich, they did a great job. I personally think they have everything they need in order to win the Champions League. And we saw very good performances recently. Also, a factor that we have to consider is, like, you know, when does the German Bundesliga start? When does the EPL start? And the other leagues? Nobody can really foresee that for now. For us and for the German teams, it would be obviously an advantage if we start as early as possible, maybe on May 9th or 16th. And that could be a huge advantage for us, for the German teams.
Meanwhile, it's quite the soap opera that is developing around Manuel Neuer at the moment. Of course, earlier on in the season, we saw Bayern Munich come out and confirm that they would sign Alexander Nübel for the start of the next campaign. And then over recent days, we've heard Rummenigge talking about Neuer and his new contract. Neuer's come out and said, "I've done contracts at this club for 10 years and nothing has ever been leaked." This is quite dramatic, really, for such a big club to get it this public for such a big star.
Yes, it is. Personally, I think Manuel Neuer is still a fantastic goalkeeper, and I think he's the number one option. There's no doubt about that in Munich, even if I'm not working there. But to me, there's no doubt that he's going to play. But obviously, Bayern Munich has also, they have to plan the future. And Alex Nübel, he's a very talented young goalkeeper who proved already with Schalke 04 that he's an excellent goalkeeper, and he was okay with signing a contract as a second goalkeeper. So therefore, obviously, to me, it's all about performance in the end. I really think that it's very helpful and good for Manuel Neuer that he has, like, a very strong number two that always puts him under pressure. But to me, there is no doubt that Manuel Neuer is the number one.
Meanwhile, away from Bayern Munich, of course, one of the great stories in Germany this calendar year has been Erling Haaland and the immediate success that he had at Borussia Dortmund. How good is he, in your opinion?
He's just fantastic. So we have to say that. And nobody really knew what's going to happen when he enters the German Bundesliga. And then the first game he scored, the second game he scored, the third. And we just wondered, what is he doing here, right? So I personally didn't really expect him to score 12 goals already. I mean, he's still a young player, but if you look at him, he's technically really good, actually. He's very strong, he's tall, he's fast, he knows how to protect the ball. And long term, I think there's no doubt that he's going to make his way. And for Borussia Dortmund, the only question is, how can they keep him?
Of course, a lot of youngsters plying their trade in the Bundesliga. Impressive at the moment. One in particular who just signed a new contract at Bayern, Alphonso Davies. It's incredible how quickly his star has risen over the last few months.
I mean, his value right now is about, I think, 45 million. That's impressive. He's 19 years old. He came from Vancouver. And the interesting thing is, he started off as an offensive player. Now Hansi Flick made him into a fullback. And I mean, he's an absolute rocket. I think he's one of the most talented players we have in German Bundesliga. He's very fast, and he also works very hard when it comes up against the ball. He has a very good one-on-one, and I think he's a huge talent. He already proved that he has it, and Bayern Munich is really, really lucky to have him.
How difficult is that to do, to go from one position to another and the way it's done so smoothly?
I mean, I witnessed already some players in my own team, you know, that started off as a striker and went back as fullback or even center back. I mean, in the end, as a young player, you have to take what you can get, right? So if you're 19 years old or 17 years old, you can't really say, okay, that's my position, I'm going to play that position. You have to adapt. And obviously, it's always helpful if you're if you're like a very fast player, if you have the athletic ability to do so. And I think he's got everything. And to me, still, it was kind of not a miracle, but you know, I didn't expect that, because coming from Vancouver into like that kind of, you know, roster of Bayern Munich, obviously you need some time to adapt, but he didn't really need that. So, and it's just impressive to see.
Meanwhile, a lot of eyes on Gio Reyna at Borussia Dortmund. What have you made of what you've seen so far from the youngster?
I mean, it's another story. He's even younger. He's 17 years old. He came from the New York FC Academy, and he's a very intelligent player. I think he can play almost every position up front, and he's very technical. He's got a very good pace, and he already played 8 times in Bundesliga, and I think he already has like 2 Champions League caps already. He's a big, big talent, and recently players from America, from Canada, they really made an impact here on the German Bundesliga, and I think the market there is incredible, and more teams bring scouts over in order to find players.
Arne, great stuff. Thank you very much for your time, mate.
I thank you. Have a good day.
Well, just a reminder, the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast has dropped today. You can check that out over on the website.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Well, we welcome back Sid Lowe to the show. Ali Moreno with us as well, as we turn the clock back 17 years. 17 years to the very day that Ronaldo scored that hat-trick against Manchester United in the Champions League for Real Madrid, and received a standing ovation not only from the travelling fans, but also the home supporters as well. Ali, I want to start with you, because we've talked about this a lot. You say for you, maybe Ronaldo is better than Cristiano Ronaldo, maybe on his day as well, better than Lionel Messi. This performance, I imagine, epitomizes your argument.
Very much so, and I think what gave this performance so much coverage and so much importance is the fact that it happened at Old Trafford against Manchester United in Champions League, and so everything got magnified. Now, Ronaldo had been doing this for years, but as we know, there's a tendency for the Premier League, and for England in particular, to be very insular, and so nothing ever happens outside of England, so nothing of importance, and so in this case, Ronaldo went to England, went to Manchester, and dropped a hat-trick on Manchester United. And mind you, this is not even the best version of Ronaldo. This was sort of the last few good years of Ronaldo that he had left at Real Madrid. But primetime Ronaldo was in Barcelona, primetime Ronaldo was with Inter and with Brazil. What we were getting from Ronaldo here was sort of the last few signs of what the sort of player that he was and the sort of player that he had become. But by now, at the time that he comes to Old Trafford and drops his hat-trick, this is a Ronaldo that was considered to have lost a step or two, given the injuries that he had had in Italy and the injuries that he had had in the past. And so, again, this wasn't even the best version of Ronaldo, and still he went to Old Trafford, dropped a hat-trick. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Walked off the field to a standing ovation.
It's incredible. You mentioned it, Ali. He wasn't even guaranteed to start. Raul was off injured. Ronaldo coming in very much at the twilight of his career. But goodness me, Sid, what a performance this was.
Yeah, it really was. And it's important what Ali says. You know, the reality is that Ronaldo wasn't the player at Real Madrid that he had been. But if you take the rest of his career away and you look at his Real Madrid years in isolation, you'd still say, what a striker. And as Ali rightly says, he wasn't the striker he'd once been, but he was still better than everybody else. And I think what we saw at Old Trafford in part was, as Ali says, a glimpse of what he had been, a glimpse of that natural talent, and also a glimpse of just the kind of that sense of superiority. And you see it in the goal that struck at the near post, which maybe Barthez makes a bit of a mess of, but the way he hits it in a kind of like, okay, that's done. And then the one that he bends into the corner, which again is done with if you like, a kind of a degree of confidence, a level of a sense of superiority, which I think reflects that this is a guy who was absolutely supremely talented. So much so that if you talk to people who played in that Real Madrid team, they will always say that Zidane and Ronaldo were way above everybody else in terms of talent, in terms of natural ability. And I remember talking to Luis Figo about Ronaldo once and him saying, well, Ronaldo didn't really train very hard, partly because he didn't have to. He was too good, you say. So the rest of us would be going absolutely mad to try and reach his level. And he would just waltz in and say, do you want a couple of goals today? Okay, go and score a couple of goals. And it was that level of quality and security in himself that made him so good. But admittedly, it's also true that, of course, that and the very many injuries were part of the reason that there was this sort of decline towards the end. But this was a reminder of the fact that on his day, he just couldn't be stopped.
And Sid, we talked yesterday after Rafael's comments about Neymar and how he's always seems to be fighting to be liked. Ronaldo, the complete opposite in the fact that he just seems to be loved, whether it's in Brazil, Real Madrid, wherever he's been. He is such a likeable character.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that you pose that through those comments about Neymar. Neymar is fighting to be liked. Ronaldo didn't try and be liked. He just was. And in a way, I think that was part of the reason why people liked him, because there wasn't this kind of attempt to put on a face. There wasn't this attempt to win people over. It was just Ronaldo being Ronaldo. He was incredibly natural in the way that he behaved. Now, of course, at times he could be difficult, not least because he was a player of such a high level with a huge amount of pressure on him and an entourage around him. But he always gave the impression of living with a kind of a relaxed, laid-back attitude that, as you rightly say, made him very, very likable for everyone who dealt with him.
Ali, as someone as a former striker, how weird was it to see someone who was so naturally brilliant at the game?
And to see him up close and personal, and to see this guy out on the field doing things with the ball that you usually would associate with smaller guys, with guys of the size of Lionel Messi, the skillful type over short spaces. And yet, the thing about Ronaldo was the fact that he could do that over short spaces, but he could also destroy you with being explosive over long distance. And he had the strength and the physicality to have people just kind of bounce off of him. So it was a combination of so many different things that nowadays you say, well, he has this strength, he has this power, he has this skill, he has this and that. Well, Ronaldo was all of that in one player. And so at his very best, you would see the runs that you have seen time and time again in the videos. If people want to go back and Google it, in the videos that he had with Barcelona. And he did the same thing with Inter. And he did the same thing at times with Real Madrid. And he did the same thing at the international level with Brazil. And to the point of him being likable is that wherever he played, that smile, when he scored a goal, was always there. And so it just brought you in. There was a vulnerability about Ronaldo, and there was a humanity about Ronaldo that I think opened the doors to everybody to be part of his world. And there's so many sort of flaws that he had to his characters, and the partying, and the girls, and the women, and all these things that sort of surrounded Ronaldo made him human, and therefore more relatable. The smile and the likability of Ronaldo came natural. He didn't have to fight for it. He didn't have to force it on anybody. And people just appreciated the sort of player that he was out on the field and the fact that he was human off the field. All of that made Ronaldo something that was very special to watch. And again, on his best day, I still maintain the best player I ever played against. And that includes a whole lot of list of players. Ronaldo was special.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. For more from Ali, you can join him on Extra Time, him and Stevie answering your questions.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today. Napa know-how.
Father's Day knickknacks. That funny mug, ironic tie, or worse, IOU coupon books. It's time to get yourself something you want, Dad, like a Craftsman half-inch corded impact wrench for $99.99. It's the perfect gift to give to yourself. And while you're here, don't forget to shop all our great deals on Craftsman tools. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Offer ends 6/30/20.
Welcome into Extra Time. Ali Moreno and Stevie Nicol with me today. The first question for you, Stevie. If you had to pick between Sancho or Timo Werner for Liverpool, which one would you choose and why?
I would think I would go for Timo Werner. You know, I think Timo Werner basically can play all the way across the front line. He could play in the left side, he could play in the right, and he could play centre forward. Sancho, I think, could play either left or right. I don't think Sancho could play centre forward. So for that main reason, I would take Timo Werner.
Would you concur, Alejandro?
Yes, I would. I think Timo Werner gives you more flexibility and more options in the attack, and I think actually addresses areas of need for Liverpool. Whenever is it that Roberto Firmino perhaps is not scoring goals or not playing all that well, or maybe he needs a rest here and there and you need a player in that central position? I agree with Stevie that Timo Werner can give you that position and can give you an upgrade in terms of what the options would be of Liverpool coming off the bench.
Right then, boys.
We've heard of the best teams that you've ever seen play. What are the worst teams that you've ever seen play? Ali, Chivas USA?
Yeah, we were not good. And I saw that on a daily basis. I've said this a few times. I thought I had a couple more years left in me physically to play, but I did not want to be part of that environment any longer. And if a team you feel like it retired you, I do think that by definition and by default, it should be the worst experience I've had as a player. And clearly that was the case.
That's the phone, Stevie. That's got to be you with a home phone. Stevie,
no,
the worst team you've ever seen play?
Definitely Moreno. Do you know what? I'd have to say Derby County in the Premier League were... Every time I watch them play, I try to figure out... You know, we always talk about how the Championship, which is the league below the Premier League, is one of the toughest leagues in the world, never mind anything else. And every time I saw Derby County play, I thought to myself, how did this team get out of the Championship? I mean, to be one of the top three teams in the championship, you have to have something about you. Either you're a great football team, or you're a right fighting team. And this Derby County side that played in the Premier League had absolutely neither, so I just don't understand how they actually got to the Premier League in the first place.
Stevie, can you please give your honest opinion on Rafael's comments about Jules' best friend? This is on yesterday's show when Rafael was talking about Neymar, saying he's not a leader in the dressing room, he doesn't like to listen to criticism.
I would suggest that would be correct. You know, unless you're in the dressing room, you'll never know that. But what you can do is you can watch Neymar on the field. And people that are leaders do it on the field, particularly. And players that are great teammates and a huge part of the team, you see everything on the field of play that you could have a good idea of what goes on in the dressing room. And the only thing I've ever seen from Neymar since he's gone to PSG is me, me, me. Nothing else. So I certainly wouldn't argue with anybody saying that he's not a leader in the dressing room for certain.
Ali?
Yeah, based on the evidence that we see in front of us, and Stevie referred to it, we don't really know what happens once the locker room doors are closed. But in the evidence that we see in front of us, you would have to surmise and you would have to suggest that Neymar is far from being a leader. What I would say is that whenever we talk about players that are true leaders and true strong presence in the locker room and within the important within the important structure of a team and at the nucleus of that important structure of a team, you don't have either former teammates or players that would know what the inner workings of that locker room was ever coming out and saying something against those players. So guys that have been true captains and true leaders, you don't ever hear former teammates or former players actually referring to them as he wasn't a leader, he wasn't this, or he wasn't that. So when those things start coming out from people that have had some sort of interaction with you in the past, there's got to be some element of truth to it. And we don't have the whole story and we don't have access to that information. But clearly all signs point to the fact that Neymar has come up short on a leadership aspect. Doesn't make him a bad player, doesn't make him a bad person, but it does make him a person who has not been able to carry the leadership role within the national team.
Every good leader has one thing in common, regardless of their ability, and they're an example. They're an example not just on the field of play, but every single day. And you cannot say that about Neymar. He's not an example for anybody. Never mind his teammates, he's not an example for kids watching the game, the way he dives around and the way, you know, the way he just tries to go around five and six players without using his teammates, the way he behaves on and off the field at times. This guy is not an example, and every great leader and every true leader has always been an example.
Stevie, do you play video games?
I still play one video game, and it's called Mario Kart. And on the odd occasion I do play it, I'm always on my bike, which I haven't been on for a while, to be honest. But when I do, I play Mario Kart.
So just to set the scene, he's on his exercise bike playing Mario Kart.
Correct.
What a sight.
And are you 100? Are you 150cc, Stevie?
Oh, I absolutely no. I'm pretty good.
Yeah,
I'll take MDR. Mario Kart, big time.
Ali, what video games do you play?
Well, on the occasion in which I play video games with my sons, usually it's FIFA. But in order to make that happen, I have to be a five-star team, and Alejandro, my oldest, will have to play with like a 2.5, three-star team so that it becomes an actual match. And then they both my kids enjoy having me play one of these war games, whether it's Call of Duty or Halo or something like that, because I have no idea what I'm doing, and I'm running around with a gun, not clear idea as to what I'm supposed to do and how I find the other players. But they do enjoy it because they know what they're doing and they're able to seek me out in whatever the map is, and they kill me very easily, and they seem to enjoy that very much. It's to the point to where it's actually an enjoyable family activity.
Hey Dan, you've got to remind me, there is actually a game that I hate playing, but I actually do it because my grandson liked it, and I can't remember the name of it. You know the one I'm talking
Minecraft.
About, Dan, where it seems like Minecraft. I mean, mind-blowing and mind-bending. I don't get that. I could never get the point of it. But I played anyway because he wanted me to play. But boy, did I not enjoy that.
Yeah, mine has moved on to Fortnite now. Is your grandson playing Fortnite, Stevie?
Oh, he's past that. He's a wee past Fortnite now.
Oh, yeah?
I couldn't even tell you what he's on.
Oh, wow.
Oh, mental.
Yeah, it's like Rainbow Siege something Dan. Come on, you got to keep up, buddy.
No, exactly. Mine's only 8, though, isn't he? He was playing against Matteo Bonetti at Fortnite last week.
I bet he beat him.
My youngest was like, Nate's playing with a strange man on the iPad. He's got a very deep voice. It doesn't sound safe.
Well, he was right, yeah, but he was a strange man.
He's got that right.
It's true. Stevie, did you ever play on a team that used a sweeper? If so, how different was it from playing without a sweeper?
Well, to be honest, I'd have to say that whenever I played in a team that was a sweeper, it was usually me that was a sweeper. So I don't remember playing in front of anybody
like
who
role?
Was a sweeper, per se. Oh, tell you what, are you kidding? You sit in your armchair and order people around. You go there, you go there. I'll just tidy up all the little bits. You get plenty of time on the ball. You look like Franz Beckenbauer. No, what a great sport. If you've got a brain. If you've got a brain and you know how to use that sport, I tell you what, it's fantastic. Well, because the great thing is, all you're doing is basically reading the play in front of you and passing the ball. Because you're not chasing people, you're not fighting with people, you're not tackling people. You're just sweeping up all the danger, cutting out all the danger, and making sure that it doesn't actually get to the stage where you have to do anything. So if you've got a brain, you're just like the conductor telling everybody to go left, right, you step up, you come back. Fantastic position.
Dan, it is the pickup game special as a retired player. Playing the sweeper position.
Right.
That is the go-to if you just want to get some touches on the ball and don't want to get involved in tackles. That is ideal position for you in a pickup game once you've retired from the professionals.
Inside and outside, Ali.
What do you mean inside and outside? Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, inside and outside, Dan. Inside joke, but yes, inside and outside. I agree with you 100%.
James Rodriguez or Luis Suarez? Better fit for Inter Miami, Ali.
Better fit is Luis Suarez because they're actually in need of a striker. You already have a playmaking advanced midfielder in Rodolfo Pizarro, in which you have invested a lot of money and have made him the key part and the key figure of your attack. So he would be the one building the play, and then you would need a striker to finish those plays. And so, if that's the case, and if Luis Suarez is indeed available to you, I do think that in terms of need, Luis Suarez is a better fit for Inter Miami.
Stevie?
How about he's just a far better player? I don't care if my team needs a goalie. It doesn't matter, because if I've got Suarez up front, that'll negate that problem. The same at centre-back. If I need a centre-back, you know what? I'll take Suarez anyway, because that'll negate that. All the way back, all the way through, if you've got Suarez up front in your team in MLS, you're going to take away half of your problems that's going on behind. So, easy peasy. Luis Suarez.
Final question. What were your guys' haircut like as a kid? Steve, you've had the same haircut for life, haven't you?
No. See, that's where you're wrong, Dan. It's not often you're wrong, but you're wrong again. As a kid, I had a side shed. As an early teenager, I had the old axe up the middle pattern, one like that and one down the other side. And then when I was about 20, I got this thing, the old spiky.
Right.
It's getting a bit out of control now.
And you've had that for 40 years.
I'm going to say I was 22. Yeah, Michael was 6 months old when I got it done. So
right, good. Right, what's a side shed?
He's 36 now. Right. A side shed is like the old, you know, the big wavy bit at the front. And the pattern up the side and a big wavy bit right across there.
Ali?
As a young kid, I used to have the part down, I guess, my left-hand side and kind of come over this way. But as you know, my hair and my hair type does not give me a lot of flexibility in terms of what I can do. So it became very quickly and very apparent to me that, you know what, it's just time to shave it and that's it. And then it grows back and you shave it again, and then I don't have many other options. I don't have the flexibility for a size shed? I don't have that in my game.
Dan, you've heard of a Coors Lick, right?
Cow's Lick,
yes. So for anybody who doesn't know what a Coors Lick is, yeah. So as I said, when it goes across there, I had a big Coors Lick, which is, you know when a coo sticks its tongue out and it's like that? All day long? That's what my hair was like, right across there. So it was a Coors Lick. That's what we call it in Scotland.
Beautiful.
Yeah. What a visual.
I tell you what, teenage Dan Thomas had a beautiful mullet.
Oh,
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Serious up front and party
in
the back.
Early 20s, I had my tips done like a bad boy band. Oh, beautiful. Beautiful. That then brings us to the end of my tips. So you would just get the top tips bleached.
Right.
So it looked really sexy, very cool.
And all that nonsense. Yeah.
Exactly.
Flock of Seagulls style. Oof, what a state.
Yes. Yeah, tips, yes. That's it. Thank you very much. ESPN FC back tomorrow for more. Stevie and Ali, thank you very much.
Ta-da.